Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com.
Enjoy the show. 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 Enjoy the show.
I'm Zach Birchie. Joining me this week for a little bit of Shooting the Breeze, it's the author of Shelf Life and one of the co-hosts of Ninja Consultants podcast, Erin Finnegan. Erin, thank you for coming back.
Hey, no problem.
And joining her and me is her husband, Noah Fulmore, also the other co-host of Ninja Consultants. Noah, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you.
It's great to have you guys back on. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a little while.
Yeah, it's been like almost a year, actually, I think. Maybe a little longer than that. But it's kind of a slow news period right now. We're sort of, TAFF is around, we're past the beginning of the winter season. Tokyo Anime Fair isn't for another month. Convention season doesn't start for another month and a half or so. So we're sort of taking it easy around here, and I figured I'd have you guys on and talk a little bit about what anime we've been watching lately, and then just take a whole bunch of Twitter questions. So that's sort of the plan. But I'm curious, Erin, what have you been watching lately? You were sort of buried under a perpetual mountain of anime for Shelf Life, probably the most demanding column on Anime News Network in terms of writing. Next, you know, the stream is also very demanding. But so what have you been watching lately?
I am getting the bottom of the review pile, so maybe there'll be a new shipment soon.
Should be, yeah. There's some new stuff.
I watched, like, we've been going through One Piece. I'm like turning around to look at it. One Piece Collection 3, which hasn't quite caught up yet to the point where I started watching One Piece when I took over Shelf Life. And I'm going to say Collection 3 is great time. Like, spoilers for Monday's column. But, I think that's a good place to start for people. Like, I wasn't really... It was kind of hard to get into Seasons 1 and 2 because I'm not really into, like, the whole funny evil clown pirate thing. And that's finally over. They're on the Grand Line. It's good times.
This is the beginning of the Baroque Works arc.
Where it actually starts to get good, and there's stuff like pirates versus dinosaurs. Crazy stuff. I've been looking at the rental titles. Like, I rent stuff from, like, rentanime.com or whatever. It takes a little while for them to add new titles. So yeah. I'm watching Kobato, the Clamp series from a couple years ago, and it is... It is certainly...
It's a show.
It's a show. It's animated. I could see watching that if you had, like, a really high fever or a cold. Like, really bad cold or really bad hangover.
Wow. So
the
a sparkling...
Colors are cheap, right, if you're hungover.
That is a sparkling recommendation.
I think it might be insulting to fans of the show. There are certainly cameos by other Clamp characters. That happens. And then the third thing, I've been trying to catch up on, like, Chihafura before. So I'm trying to watch the first 12 episodes. Maybe on episode 6. So I finished that up in the next couple of days.
It's the obscure...
Karuta. But they talk about it all the time on AnonCast.
Oh, okay, never mind.
So it's not obscure. Yeah. But I have a special connection with Chihafura that I don't know if I've mentioned before, but, like, when I was in Tokyo in 2009, Ed Chavez was like, hey, I'm going to this manga awards ceremony. I can see if I can let you in. And it was like an awards ceremony for other authors of manga, authors and editors, vote on, like, the year's best titles. And so they kind of paraded out the best titles of that year. And this was before, you know, any anime was announced for Chihafura. And that was the one that won the award. So I learned a little bit about it. And the author of the manga wasn't... She doesn't live in Tokyo. She lives in, like, far away somewhere where she cannot make it because of her manga schedule. So her editor came and, like, talked about the series and accepted the award in her place. But that's where I'd, like, first heard of it. So when I heard it got an anime, I was like, oh, wow. I was kind of surprised because it's such a weird topic. But also, like, not that surprised, since it was winning like this kind of critics, not critics, but, you know, like industry choice, like artist choice sort of award.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I like that show a lot. I haven't made it past episode 10 yet, but I need to make sure I catch up and watch it all before it inevitably disappears from streaming and never gets any kind of DVD or Blu-ray release.
Yeah.
I think Bamboo said 12 was the tearjerker, and that's why I'm trying to make it to that episode. But Noah is having a hard time getting into it, which is weird because we both really love Takaro no Go and like consumed it like rapidly and with, you know, great enthusiasm. And I've been collecting the Takaro no Go manga in like both English and Japanese and freaking out about it and that kind of thing.
That had a haunted Go board. It's just cards.
Yeah, it's just people, man. It's not very exciting.
Oh, because you like the ghost
space marines in there.
The ghost aspect is what's missing. There's no funny ghost.
Well, it's hard to, because we here in America certainly don't have sort of a tradition of card playing tournaments. I mean, certainly you have like poker and gambling and blackjack and stuff like that, but nothing in the same vein.
Right. It's more like a cultural institution. Like they go to the cultural institute to play it because it's like such a traditional Japanese thing. And those poems are so historical. And
so everyone getting so upset over what looks to me to be like a game of, you ever play ER as a kid?
Yeah, I know what you're talking
about. Okay. So how can they get so upset? How can there be tears on the card pile, you know? But I have not really, I haven't really given it a chance. So
that's kind of
sure
like
that if I paid more attention, I'd probably get into it.
You start reading the news when I start watching it. Like you're.
That may be true.
What I heard of the award ceremony was that it wasn't that much of a sports manga. It was more like more about the love story. Like that's what the editor kept saying, that it wasn't really that much about the card game, and that was a minor point. But like the anime is all about the card game, and they keep playing like this really inspirational music, like ABC Worldwide, you know, Wide World of Sports, or like, you know, Olympic themes going on in the background.
You're right. It's like, but you know, as it goes on, it's less and less about the card game, at least even where I'm at. It's still, you know, they talk about the card game and everything, but it is definitely a relationship show, like any good sports or gaming anime or manga.
Right.
It's not really about the game. It's about the people playing it. And it's, it is pretty, it is, you know, very much concerned with that game in the beginning, but you have to set up some stakes. I mean, they make sure that there are stakes involved and that they are fighting for something and they're trying to win certain things. And that's important. But I think the fact that the game is so unrelatable, like I've still, after watching 10 episodes, I mentioned this before, I still don't really know how they're playing that. Like I still don't really grasp it. I'm kind of like, so they listen to this tape and then they have to like predict what the poem is based on the syllables, and it's like, this is really a Japanese thing. There's a little barrier of entry there, and I did find some of those earlier episodes like in the middle there, like the 5 and 6, a little dull, but it wasn't enough to keep me away from the show. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, no spoilers, but that episode where there's her childhood friend who stopped playing the card game.
Yeah.
And you know that it's because of some card game related tragedy. And it is. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
That's not quite. But I get the gist of how they're playing it, and I've read a little bit about it because for a while I was including it in unusual manga genres, but then like the details of the card game, I have no idea where they're moving cards back and forth at the end, and I'm like, what? But I guess when I was watching Kakarot no Go, I didn't really pick up on how to play Go, and they would have in like the fan sub version, there was a live action segment where they'd have two little kids and they'd be like, go school, and they tell you how to play.
Yeah.
I didn't really learn how to play Go from that either. Like I had to learn how to play Go from, there are a couple of like local Go chapters. Like I went that far, like all my friends bought Go sets, we went to the local Go society, like I played in a tournament where like a 10 year old beat several 10 year olds beat the hell out of me at Go.
Yeah, they weren't 10.
Okay,
that kid was eight.
Eight.
Yeah.
Eight. 8 year old sets about the level that I played, and I lost.
And that was the last time.
And then I kind of stopped playing Go after that. No, I still play on like my phone and sometimes.
Well, but it's nothing compared to those Mahjong anime.
That's true. You have to know how to play mahjong.
So deep into it, you have to have mahjong calluses just to understand what's going on.
Yeah, you're totally right about the whole like card game related tragedy being hilarious though. Because if you put it in any other context, it would just be the most laughable thing in the world. Like if it were like a Magic the Gathering anime, someone's like, I can't use those. My father used to use, you know, Llanowar elves or whatever, and he has like some
all right, well, there's
horrible flashback
South Park episode where he has to tap dance. But he's giving up tap dancing. Butters.
Yeah. Was it the twitchy one?
No, you're right. It's Butters. Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. I remember that episode. Yeah.
He killed like 14 people with a tap shoe accident.
Yeah, yeah. It's that kind of a thing. But, you know, there's enough pathos in the series, I think. They earn it. I mean, it's not... Mm-hmm. When situations are presented, when you think about it, yeah, it's like, boy, this is pretty silly. But while you're watching it, it flows. I mean, it fits in the show. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I like that show, and we've certainly talked about it a lot.
Yeah, they've already discussed it.
On, yeah, every week, every week the stream is basically, hey, you should watch T.I. Furu.
Right.
And then here's
which
all
sort of like
stuff.
Where I'm like, I don't want to miss it.
Yeah.
But then we also started watching Bodacious Space Pirates, but we've only seen maybe 4 or 5 episodes.
Now you're ahead of me. I'm a little behind on that. I think I watched the third one, and then I kind of want to get the Blu-rays on that one from Sentai and just kind of sit down and watch it in big chunks. I really like that show, but I want to watch it in chunks.
It's pretty strong.
Yeah.
I've been pleasantly surprised by how much thought has gone into not just, you know, the setting, but the mechanics, how space combat works.
It's, yeah.
It has the feel of like a 1960s sci-fi, not like a pulp sci-fi novel, but from that period. You get this feeling of being sort of relaxed in this world. It's not like it's a super military, like Tech Jansen novel. It's more that you're introduced to it in such a sort of fluid way that the world is sort of built around you and you don't even notice.
Yes.
I've been kind of bored with 3 episodes in a row talking about tactics.
Yeah, well, it is. I have to say, like, you know, everyone said, oh, it's based on a light novel. And, you know, I'm like, really? Okay.
That explains all the dialogue.
Yeah, well, yeah, that show doesn't seem like it's based on a light novel. It's not assuming that I've read the book, which I really like. Not often you get light novel anime that hasn't assumed that you've read some other material. And so it's all really sort of awkwardly put together. There's a lot of shows like that where it's based on a light novel and it's like, don't assume I know who these people are, or don't assume I already care about the situation.
Yeah.
You still have to make it compelling television. And Space Pirates seems like it's not making those assumptions, but.
And I know that I can't think of any of the titles now, but I know that every time we see something that's based on a light novel, we're like, oh, you know, this is the kiss of death.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking,
but
you know,
Durara
Spice and Wolf.
And
yeah.
I thought was really solid.
And
Durarara was really solid.
Bakano too.
Yeah,
those are sort of the standbys. Like, those are the sort of exceptions that prove the rule. And then you have stuff like Chrome Shelled Regios.
I thought it was based on a game.
Nah, that's a light novel. You can tell. And what was that show? Horizon in the Middle of Nowhere. Ooh, yeah.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, lucky you. Lucky you. Terrible, terrible shit. But yeah, anyway. So based on a line, it's really solid writing for that. I wouldn't have been able to tell if someone hadn't told me. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I was assuming it was like original works or something.
Nope,
which is probably a good sign. Anyway,
yeah. That's where the name comes from. It's just kind of a cheeky name. It doesn't really mean anything. Mm. I'm sure that'll get a lot of people to not watch the show though.
Oh, I liked the title when you guys were like, I wouldn't watch it based on the time. Like, I would. Bodacious. That sounds awesome.
It's Space Pirates and they're bodacious.
I was hoping it meant some kind of retro thing or something, though. Like, if they're using, why translate that one word as bodacious, you know? Like,
yeah.
Is it because it's 80s slang from Japan? Like, it must have been really hard to decide.
Valley Girl Buccaneers.
Because it's not like it's bodacious you or something. Like, it's the English katakana. It's like, whatever the other...
Yeah, I think the actual translation is like miniskirt pirates or something like that.
Wait, what?
Yeah, which doesn't really mean anything. I mean, they're wearing school uniforms, but that's about it. You know,
it's evocative. Then it's just like a space pirate girl themed cafe,
right? Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm digging that show. It's nice that there's something to that was the good one from this past season. Yeah. Is there anything else that you, I mean, I know you sort of, I'm sure you plan this stuff out. Anything else from this past season that you're thinking about tackling for the column?
I'd watched a couple of first episodes of things, and I think I gave up on like the lives of high school boys it's way too boring.
Can I plug Fractale?
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
That, yeah, I know, right?
You're the guy that liked that.
Yeah, well, did you watch the whole thing through?
No.
Yeah. No, it's only 12 episodes. I was really interested because I read the book by Azuma. So I wrote a feature about it for Otaku USA like a couple weeks ago. But that's what we've been in Fractal because we finally had to finish watching it for that. Go ahead.
And it's just that there's it is subverting what it appears to be. And he is, and I don't know, Aaron and I have sort of argued over this, but I think that Azuma, the writer? Or the
he was a co-creator.
Yeah, co-creator. So he is against the database, the otaku database. He comes out opposing the moe blob, sort of, you know, super flat narrative. And that is his attempt to refute it. And you don't really get that on the basis of the first couple of episodes, which just appear to be like a recycling of a lot of tropes and pulling a lot of stuff from the database. But it's actually, particularly with his female characters, he works very hard to bring them a real, like, working... He tries to turn them into real people.
I think there are a lot of really great concepts in the show that are really interesting and worth exploring, but unfortunately, as in like a television series, it just doesn't hold together very well. Like, although a lot of the ideas are good, some of the scenes are poorly directed. Like, within an episode, it'll be boring, even though it's only 11 episodes or however many. Like, it seems like it should be better paced. It seems like they were kind of suffering from maybe just poor direction and maybe like inexperienced TV writing, which is a little... kind of a strange thing to say, but
it doesn't really quite hold together. I thought that it ended poorly.
Yeah.
It sort of undercuts what it seems to be attempting to do.
Yeah, it's got a really weird ending. Like, they're going in one direction and they add this other layer onto it that they don't really go into very much, and it doesn't really make sense or come, but it's not like the usual bad ending. It's like a different kind of bad ending.
Yeah.
That you're not kind of sick
of seeing.
It still
doesn't fit.
It doesn't quite work.
But it's relatively short, and if you're sort of interested in... Well, I don't know if you've read... I mean, if you haven't read the Otaku Database Animals, it's pretty short. It's only really like 100 pages and then 40 pages of citations.
Mm.
But it's really important, I think, especially in terms of the shows that have come out in the past decade, because he wrote it a decade ago.
Right, it's like a dated kind of book.
He prefigured everything that has happened pretty much in anime over the past 10 years. And I think he's again it. I think that that was his attempt to create a show to sort of refute that formula.
But then the show is not good enough, so a lot of like knows, like looking up before I did the article, like some other anime blogs to see what the fan reaction was to it. And apparently a lot of people think like, well, this is kind of a half-assed moe show that doesn't do anything, or you know, they think it's a database show that's a failure instead of being like critiquing database shows.
That's really interesting, because all I heard was that the ending shits the bed and it's not it's not worth watching. And then I had to do this very long edit job on this really extensive interview that we had, a transcription of a live event with him and like the whole cast of that show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really long interview. It's on the site. It's a good interview. But he goes on about how, like, he dumped his whole heart and soul into this. And if people don't like it, then he's going to quit because this is the only thing. He's like, this is every great idea I've had in one show. And if people don't like it, well, I asked them to look at it again because I really went for it here. And, like, he was almost sort of, like, not apologizing for it, but acknowledging that people didn't really like it that much.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then there was that whole kerfuffle with Funimation where the production committee told Funimation that they can have their streaming of Fractale back when they solve internet piracy. which was sort of out of the gate kind of flummoxed that show's launch here. So it didn't have a great, it had an inauspicious beginning, but I know they're planning on putting it out on Blu-ray here at some point. So maybe I'll catch up with it then. Yeah. If you're saying it's good, if you're saying, because that's a really interesting concept, if it's a refutation of the database show.
There are also a couple of really interesting sort of points in it, especially one episode at some point in the show, the main character and his friend, like they go into a city, and it's like a virtual city that's only populated by people's avatars. To me, this is the most interesting kind of bit of the show, where they reveal that the avatars in the city do things like they're all sort of artists. Like they meet one girl who's like a sculptor, but because she's been having problems with her kind of sculptor career and can't really find funding. And it's like the economics of the shows and the different people they meet in the show are pretty interesting. And the city is really like well animated. And also kind of concurrent with that episode, there's another part where like it's revealed that some of these like fancy kind of rich artisan people with their avatars, they also do things like have a fake kind of farm with sheep out in a countryside outside of the city. But it's a real, it looks like a nod to, I guess, in like Versailles, like during that court of
Marie Antoinette.
Yeah, Marie Antoinette and all that. They did things like build a little rustic cottage with like fake, you know, have sheep and things to be oh, it's the wholesome farm life. There's like a nod to that. That's interesting.
Huh.
That was kind of the best part.
Oh, okay.
Of the show for me. There's also a whole system I didn't really realize till like we'd watched the whole thing, where the cities of people in the show, like as long as you keep syncing with the fractal system, you get, you don't have to work because you get a monthly donation, and you have to work to earn money, and then you can have money on top of your sort of fractal granted living expenses. But if you cut off syncing with fractal, then you end up being like a refugee and you just are cut off completely. You have to go and fend for yourself and you're off the grid. And they run into like a city of people who have had to like, they're just walking to a different place like refugees in today's
they can't get a signal, so they have to keep moving.
Oh, because they pissed off fractal, like their whole town did something bad and now they're cut off and they're super poor.
So I'm not a huge proponent, I'm not like a huge cheerleader. It's not so much that I didn't love it, but there's a lot going on there. It's really worth analyzing, you know.
Cool. Now, if there's meat on the bone, I'll
take it. That's what it is.
This makes me feel bad for Ozma, where he's just like, I poured my whole heart and all my good ideas into this. It's like, but I kind of feel like, yes, that's television. Like, don't you think every TV director does that every time? Like, of course you had to. Like, that's what you have to do. Like, especially in this country, it's just really hard to get a show made, you know, or even a pilot. And like, if you do get greenlit, it's kind of so statistically unlikely. Like, of course you have to put your whole heart and blood, sweat and tears into it, otherwise like what are you doing?
That's not how the Japanese system works.
It's work
for hire. And you know, having interviewed my generous share of directors over the years, there's always one project that they really felt passionately about, and you ask them about some of their other stuff and they're like, I don't even remember working on that. Yeah. So it's like, and this was like his baby. This one was his baby. So
I guess I should have used like a term more like the creator of something. I don't know, but yeah, I could see where they also are, you know, they keep pipelines open and pay for time slots to keep, you know, shows going. Or
yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I know. I hope that I don't know what the streaming numbers were like on that. I know it was not as popular as they were hoping it was going to be. So hopefully it will get some kind of release. I think Funimation said, yeah, we're going to put this out on DVD and Blu-ray, but I don't know. I will have to ask them next time I talk to them. So, okay, that's cool. Fractal. So I watched, and surely you've got this on your pile, I watched a couple of things. The first of which being Hack Quantum. I don't know if that's on your stack.
Is it like a 3-episode OVA thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched it for Otaku Say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's certainly is a dot hack thing. I guess
you see is what you get.
It's got some nice CG.
The biggest bonus is that it's really short, and so they get to the the plot you've seen done at least four times at this point, resolved quickly.
Unfortunately, I haven't watched that much dot hack. Like, I watched a little bit of it on Cartoon Network, and I wasn't interested. But it's short. There's some good CG. That's my entire review.
That's it. Yeah. Well, I started it and I'm like, you know, all right, I should watch something so I can, you know, talk about some anime on the podcast this week. And I popped it in and I'm like, let me guess. Something's going on in this MMORPG, and it's somebody gets affected in the real world, it gets knocked into a coma or something, and then they have to get to the bottom of that mystery. That is the plot of like every dot hack thing.
Right.
Which, okay, I get maybe that's what they're going for, but I don't know why they have to keep doing that story over and over again.
It's what the people like.
I guess.
Maybe. I didn't know it was still popular. I didn't know they were even still making like dot hack stuff. I thought that was, you know, 7 or 8 years ago.
I know it was really popular. There was a lot of dot hack cosplay for a while, and watching it on Cartoon Network, it looked like the world's most boring LARP.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everyone would be in costume standing around talking about the plot.
Yeah.
But talking about the plot in terms that are so sort of abstract that you don't even know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
At least they weren't drinking tea and talking about the plot. That's my
that's the worst. They were standing there in costume.
No, most of that second episode is just info dump. Just explaining what's going on. And it's like, okay, well, if this were a 13 episode show, these details would have been strung out like some of this in episode 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And it's like, man, I'm glad this is only 3. But the one thing that occurred to me is that at this point, now, I don't know the hack timeline. I don't know where this takes place. I don't know if it's supposed to be its own spinoff thing or every time there's a new hack story, that's it. It's contained. But at this point, if these are all taking place in the same universe, the world is like the most poorly programmed MMORPG. The code is like Swiss cheese because all the time people are hacking it. They're using illegal items. They're somehow accessing parts of the database they're not supposed to get into. And then people are dying or being thrown into comas all the time from playing it. So this is like the worst MMO you could possibly get involved with. Why haven't they shut it down at this point? Like,
yeah, if it was a US one, there would have been so many lawsuits. Like,
yeah. The next dot hack should just be like, all right, well, you should start playing, you know, World of Warcraft or whatever, because this is just don't play this game. Like,
I gotta pay $19.95 a month for this.
Yeah.
Maybe it's free. That's why everyone keeps playing it, even though they could die.
Well, surely
like, there's no monthly fee.
In this one, they have, and it's sort of poorly defined. In this one, they have these special glasses, like VR glasses that they put on, that apparently they can put them on like in public, and it will turn the space around them into the game. But then they play the game in front of their computers like anyone else would. I didn't really understand how that was supposed to function. I mean, I didn't care that much, but they didn't really explain that. So clearly have to buy the glasses and yeah, whatever. I don't know.
Now we're getting a lot more of that trope because you look at like Deno Coil where that was the mainstay of the plot. So I think it's kind of strange because, of course, in the 80s, we had super crazy cyberspace where, you know, you're an avatar and zipping all over the place. But now as we approach a point where you probably will see exactly this technology, it's actually becoming more prevalent in science fiction narrative.
Yeah,
I just think that's interesting.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's just my overall experience with Hack Quantum was, why did they make this?
I could picture the committee meeting where, you know, the guys are going up for the pitch and they're like, you know, there's this franchise and all this history of success and here are the sales numbers and here are 3 character designs and our rough script. What do you guys say? And they're like, this is our least risky project. Greenlit.
Yeah, pretty much. Does someone get knocked into a coma by something that happened in the game? Yes. Go ahead and make it. Like, that's the only story we're going to do with this thing. I don't know. It's just kind of worn out. I'd like to see them do something else with that whole idea, but that Emma, like, just the character designs, the design of that world, it's just not very appealing. I never really liked those character designs, especially those costume designs, that stupid flappy hat, and I could do without it. I'm just not really a huge fan.
The next dot hack should just be like a procedural lawyer show with all the law cases resulting from previous dot hack episodes.
Yeah, world's least responsible game company. Yeah. So then after that, I popped in Broken Blade, which is this film series. It was a series of theatrically released films that are like 50 minutes a piece that Sentai just put out on a 2-disc set. And I don't know if this has been sent to you yet, but it will be eventually, I'm sure. So the idea of this is a bunch of warring nations, and in this world, people are sort of born with the natural ability to manipulate quartz, and they can bend it, send it shooting through the air, whatever. It's they can
really?
Manipulate quartz, specifically quartz. I don't know.
Because it looks cool, man.
Yeah. You asked to live in a world without zinc, Jimmy. Yeah.
Come back, zinc. Come back. Yeah, no. Quartz specifically. So someone's found a use for it, I guess. And so they have these big robots that they fight each other with. And the main character, and tell me, stop me if you've heard this one before, can't manipulate quartz. He's a weirdo, an outsider. He's a loner, rebel. And can't use quartz. He's not a, they call him an unsorcerer or something like that.
Oh, Sam.
And, oh, that's like me.
Yeah.
I'm an unsorcerer. Yeah,
we're all unsorcerers. Unless there's something I don't know. It's not bad. Like, I'm joking about this, but it's not bad. I only got to watch some, you know, about two-thirds, most of the first movie that's on these discs. And the animation's nice. It's got a nice big theatrical budget to it. Dub's fine. Production design is okay. It looks sort of like anime high fantasy minus the big pauldrons. There's not a lot of pauldrons, which I'm happy about because I get annoyed by giant anime pauldrons. But so they discover this robot. They call them golems. That, of course, the kid who can't manipulate crystal, he can. He's the only one who can pilot this one. And fend off the invading nation that's coming, and there's friends fighting friends and backstabbing and all this stuff happening, and it's
twists and turns.
Twists and turns, ups and downs, a roller coaster of emotion. You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll only need the edge of your seat. No, but it's perfectly fine.
Okay.
It's perfectly fine. I really had no problems with it. I'm kind of curious to see where the story goes. I'm sort of intrigued by the concept of a serial series of films. That isn't really something you see outside of, you know, major franchises here. So it's interesting to see just one story told in a series of, like, six films that were released. I assume these got really limited theatrical runs in Japan. But it's sort of a curious concept, and the budget's nice and big, so it looks good. Not too bad. I'm curious about it. I'm curious to see more. Mm. So that's that.
Okay.
Yeah.
We watched Ice last week. I think...
Oh, yeah.
I didn't, like, I think... Erica Friedman was saying that how much she like hated it. Not to be, you know, it's not good. But when we watched the first two episodes, like I was putting it shelf worthy. I'm like, I'll recommend it. Like the third episode, it's, you know, crap. But I mean, but Noah may have some things to say about it. I think it's something that.
Well, it's got that Aeon Flux thing going on.
Well,
where just
people wear
crazy
pants,
ass bullshit all over the place.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just a huge mishmash in potentially a good way. It's incoherent, but at least there's a lot going on.
There's too much going on there. Like, they had a ton of ideas, but only three episodes. And, like, the inverse of Fractal. Like, it seems like they had too many crazy concepts, and, like, it doesn't really come together. But there's the production budget was so high, and one or two people in the forums complained that, like, having AKB48 members, like, voicing this cast badly was like a bad thing, but I'm in favor of that. Like, I think if your crazy pop idols like are attached to the project and that triples the budget of it, like bring it on. I want to see more crazy sci-fi OVAs funded by AKB48 money. Take your money where you can get it, man. Like, run with that.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I don't know. I have not seen Ice. I thought it was sort of a strange thing for them to put out, but they put out weird little things all the time. So
it's true.
It's nice that someone's doing it. So, you know,
I'm saying a lot of money went into that. Like, some of the CG doesn't blend that well, but it looks like it was rushed to production too. Like, you got the real feeling like I spent a week and a half on this script.
Oh, yeah.
Things laying around, but like there's so much like line work. Like, it looks like a much older kind of release. Like, I don't know. A friend of mine was asking to borrow it based on my review.
Wow.
That's a pretty good sign.
There you go. Yeah. That's how you know your reviews are working. If you didn't like it and someone goes, yeah, I want to give that a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
There you go. Because then you've told that guy what he needs to know about it. That's good.
Definitely.
All right. So if there's nothing else on the stack, we should go ahead and get to Twitter because we got a lot of questions here.
Yeah, totally. Sure.
All right. Twitter time. Okay. First up. Speaking of MMOs, *CGY* wants to know if anyone's playing *Star Wars: The Old Republic*. Either of you guys checking that out?
I don't really. Anime is kind of an all-consuming hobby at this point, and I don't have time for games that I can't play on my phone.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I'm an old school tabletop D&D player. I mean,
I used to play, but when I started freelance writing a lot, I had to drop out of the game.
Yeah, Dave Riley, and he was on this show, right? Not that
long
ago.
Yeah, he's been on the, on his show, he mentions his one Dungeons & Dragons experience.
Yeah, well, he won't stop making fun of me because it's it's like I'm 3 decades behind. It's like, they have these things now that are called computers, and you don't have to imagine things. It's like on the screen. But I was a Infocom player, I loved Zork and all that stuff. And when the text parser went away, I thought that people were going to object, but it turned out that no, people wanted a graphic interface. So it's kind of left me cold.
I pretty much only play button mashing fighters where I have stand a chance of winning if I can mash the buttons enthusiastically enough.
Yeah. So sorry, asterisk, CKY. Or
I actually did try this game. It is, my computer was not quite good enough for it, and there's nothing worse than a PC game and your PC's just not quite strong enough for it, and it's all crappy and the frame rate sucks, and it seemed fun. I mean, it's got the, if obviously neither of you played Mass Effect, but
we watched Dave play.
Yeah, we watched Dave play a lot of stuff.
it's very much like Mass Effect in terms of the conversation wheels and the way the whole game looks. I mean, same, BioWare made the game. And it's more single player than multiplayer. And I really don't like MMOs. But then they said, "Oh, it's mostly a single player game." I'm like, "All right, I'll check it out." And I had a bunch of friends playing it, and then I canceled my subscription before it could roll over into the next month, because that's the one thing I really hate about MMOs is continuing to pay to play a video game I already paid $60 for.
That's what .hack should really be about.
Yeah, there you go. Canceling your subscription after 1 month, yeah.
Right, and then they don't let you cancel, and it's like when you used to have to cancel AOL, the free
one. Yeah.
You have to close your bank account to get them to stop charging.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's about players faking their own deaths.
Right. Away.
They're not really in comas at all. They just wanted to stop paying. They couldn't cancel.
They just wanted Blizzard to leave them alone. Yeah. No, it seemed like a quality game. If I had a much stronger PC, I would probably have given it more of a shot. But now, even if I, upgrade my PC, I probably won't go back, because it means I'll have to pay another $15 in order to get it started again. So, whatever. Whatever, man. Mass Effect 3 comes out in a couple of weeks. I will be busy with that. All right. Baseman PhD asks, what anime and movies are you looking forward to this year? Sort of on the spot. I mean, New Evangelion. Can't wait for that. Ooh. Even though we probably won't.
Yeah, that's my answer too.
I don't think we're going to get that till next year, but yeah.
Aww.
I mean, it comes out in Japan like late this year. So based on the way those are released, we will get it next year. But it does come out in Japan, so yeah. That, other anime, the new, Hosoda, new Hosoda movie in the summer. The Fox Boy Girl, whatever that is.
Oh, we're watching one that's coming up in the New York Children's Film Festival called Letters to Momo.
That's supposed to be really good.
Okay.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
I looked at the guy's list of credits where all the other films where he's been like key animator and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, this looks like a good sign, like a studio taking a chance on having this guy direct.
Yeah. That's Production IG. They're really enthusiastic about it. And I know a couple of people who have seen it, and they said it was magnificent. So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah. We've got tickets for a show later in March. So
cool. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to. I still haven't seen Arrietty. That's on Friday. I'll check that out.
Oh, we watched that. It's like a film for, what did I say, a film for precocious children. Like, it's a children's movie, but it's pretty deep or whatever. And I don't know.
I heard it was pretty straightforward family fare.
Yeah, it's really pretty. It's the kind of thing where I kind of pictured was like an elementary school where everyone was good all week and they're showing you a movie on Friday in class. They'd show this. I don't know.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. I don't know what qualifies now as standard family fare, because it's pretty upscale, and it is nothing like Ponyo. I guess Ponyo didn't really get a very good reaction over here.
It is less of a.
It is far less fanciful.
It's for older children. Ponyo, well, Ponyo's for like 4-year-olds. This is for like 8 to 10-year-olds,
right,
or something.
Right.
8 to 12. But it's
When you say it's for them, do you mean that? The film itself is, primarily entertaining for that age group, or it's because the impression I got was that this is family fare in the sense that anyone can enjoy it like a Pixar movie or something like that.
Okay, yeah, I'd agree with that.
Sure. Yeah. I think like I'm talking about like the audience that's kind of like aimed at, but yeah, someone else described it like they said that it was kind of like a fake children's film that's actually a film for adults but parading as a children's film, like when you get YA novels that adults read that aren't really like they're marketed as YA novels, like that kind of thing. Which I could see.
I was going to say it's kind of Ponyo was kind of the first Ghibli that was out and out a children's film.
Yeah.
Like that was the first one that and I really didn't like it. But if I had kids, I totally would they would totally be
Did you watch Panda Go Panda? Like the really early
long time ago.
Yeah, Miyazaki involved. Like a lot of that reminded me of some Panda Go Panda action.
Panda Go Panda was not as frustrating in the story department.
No.
Where it's like I get the magical thinking thing, but maybe you could end your movie. Like that would be nice.
Right, but far, far fewer Celia Cants in Panda Go Panda. And let me tell you,
I was a big fan of the Celia Cant.
If you are a Celia Cant fan, Ponyo is for you. And I am.
Wow. Okay.
The all important Celia Cant
reaction I get from everyone.
Because when Noah gasped in the theater, he was like, "Oh, Celia Cant."
I guess I'm a little transparent that way.
And I was like, "Oh, it is."
That's weird. Okay. Movies, lots of stuff. There's a new. A new Wes Anderson movie coming that looks really, really good, Moonrise Kingdom. There's a new Paul Thomas Anderson movie coming at the end of the year. This is, like, all of my favorite filmmakers have a big movie coming out this year. We even get, like, a new Terrence Malick this year. So, a lot of movies I'm really looking forward to. I really want to see Brave. That looks really good. All the stuff for Disney's new one, Wreck-It Ralph, looks really cool. There's plenty of stuff. Summer looks like it might have some good stuff in it too. So yeah, we'll see.
Is this the year we get the Hobbit? I know that.
Yeah, Hobbit's the end of the year. Kind of goes without saying, but yeah, end of the year we get the Hobbit.
Yeah,
so that'll be fun. It'll be like a little trip down memory lane. Just remember those years of Lord of the Rings, man. I was really into that.
Yeah.
Oh, one of my students who did like, well, my students like I'm not teaching. I'm doing like tech support. But one of the TAs I worked with did a. He was working on a stop motion thing for the new Wes Anderson movie.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So
oh cool, yeah,
he's helping out behind the scenes.
Really looking forward.
But it's only in one scene. It's not like it's a whole stop motion movie or something.
No, I know. Yeah, I've seen the trailer. There's nothing like that in it. So yeah, he's. But you know, as Fantastic Mr. Fox proves, stop motion is his medium. So he should. I would love. I hope that he does more because he's really cut out for that. Like
yeah,
yeah, it was super sweet.
All right. Okay, Alex Leavitt asks, do you think that living in New York City provides some kind of advantage to being an anime fan?
Totally.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently not as many advantages as if you're a fan and you live in San Francisco because, oh my gosh, the Kinokuniya books in San Francisco is so much bigger, blah, blah, blah.
We're
the book
at
office
you,
is so
Chavez.
Much better. Yeah, I know. The constant whining. yeah, because like besides the... There's also like a Mitsuha shopping market kind of thing in Edgewater, New Jersey that has like a, there's like a bus that goes from whatever Port Authority. It's like a little Japanese mall kind of setup where there's a big grocery store, a bookstore, and like a couple other little shops. So I've had a great time. Like, you know, there are a bunch of different anime clubs in all the schools and then like a ton of Japanese food and like more than one place where you can go and take classes and learn Japanese. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, but also just being in the Northeast, because every state has its own convention.
Yeah.
And we have a whole conglomeration of states up here.
Right, and it's on that kind of, what they call it in like, in the language in Bama.
Boston to Atlanta metropolitan axis.
Right, yeah. So like you can get on a bus and go to like all of the major Northeast anime conventions without driving or anything.
Where if you're stuck in the middle of the Midwest, that's not really an option.
The other thing that's better about if you were in San Francisco instead, plane tickets to Japan are less expensive, but that doesn't mean you can't get, you know, direct flights from New York City to Japan. So that's a bonus as well.
I used to go to that Mitsuha when I lived there.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. When I used to live in Nyack when I worked at Wizard.
Oh really?
Oh, yep. Wow.
Mm-hmm. My grandparents lived in Nyack.
I do not miss it.
I know it well.
Even 1 minute, I do not miss it at all. I'm allergic to winter. Like I can't handle winter. So New York and I were not a good fit. I love visiting, but living there was not a good fit for me. I bragged froze in the snow. I couldn't handle it.
I'm from Michigan, so I'm like, it's not nearly as cold here. Woo!
I grew up in Colorado. Yeah,
it's not as cold as there either.
Yeah, I grew up in Arizona, so a little different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, you know, there's benefits. I think if you're going to be a fan and you're going to live on the East Coast, you should probably live New York adjacent. And if you are West Coast, you should probably live L.A. or San Francisco adjacent if you're an anime fan. Right. I would say probably more Los Angeles just because of the conventions. I live here and I rarely have to travel because I'm so close to most of the big conventions that happen out here.
I mean, Alex lives in Boston, and like Boston has a bunch of good sort of, I mean, there are Japanese restaurants and like comic shops and some good anime clubs, like the one that Mike Toole goes to, and the Harvard Anime Club has like a massive library of anime. I think they might have been on Shelf Life once, or maybe that was MIT. Mm. I don't know, with the Shelf Obsessed thing.
All I can say about the Midwest, though, is at least, and this is just anecdotal, so maybe totally untrue, but I find that the Midwestern conventions have the most detail-oriented cosplay because everyone comes from a crafty tradition in the Midwest.
Well, I think there are a lot of Michaels's and other
crafts. And there's lots of time and nothing to do.
Saying that based on our trip to Anime Central once in Chicago.
Yeah, well, nothing but corn for miles and miles. You got nothing else to do but work on your costume. Yep. All right, moving on. Crom on the Hill asks, well, this is very specific, what are your favorite anime movies from the years 1982 and 1986?
What?
So I have a list of the anime films from 1982.
I would have to look it up.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I'll read off some titles here. 1982, we got Queen Millennium, Space Adventure Cobra, Dr. Slump Movie, Go Shogun came out that year. God Mars, we got Techno Police. My Youth in Arcadia. I guess I'd have to go with.
Yeah, well, that's good. That would be.
I haven't seen if it's a Space Adventure Cobra movie. I haven't seen it yet, but I'd like to.
I would probably go with Go Shogun. It's a good movie.
What year did the Pat Labor the second movie come out?
Oh, that was late '80s.
Okay,
Akira
was 87.
Akira was 88.
88. Okay.
And we laugh it up, but I had a friend in college who like. One year, he suddenly had this crazy project where he started making top 5 or top 10 list of favorite movies by year.
Yeah.
And I was really bored in college that year and started making a database of all the movies I'd ever seen just so I could sort them by year and rank them. And then the database became corrupt and I couldn't open it anymore. And I also, after, you know, that was like 10 years ago and I've seen lots more movies. So that list is
gone. But it's a good mental exercise. Like it's...
Is it?
For us, nerds, I do
really like at Anime Week in Atlanta, there's one guy who always does a panel that's like anime, and then he picks a year, like 1982, and then he just goes over, here's a bunch of titles that came out in 1982, and shows little clips from them, and then he also compares it to like, he doesn't show clips, but it'll be like, meanwhile, in the United States, we were watching the following things in 1982, and the following cartoons debuted, and it'll be like Shirt Tales or whatever, you know. But it's an interesting panel to go to.
Okay, so he also asked about 86.
Yeah, 86.
86, we've got Castle in the Sky, Megazone 23, Part 2, They Were 11. There's some good stuff in here.
Dirty Pair,
Mystery of Nolandia, Amon Saga, Fist of the North Star. There you go. Time Stranger. I think that's what I was... I thought Go Shogun was the Time Stranger. Maybe I'm getting my stuff mixed around here. Gray Digital Target, The Gyver. The Humanoid, everyone's favorite. Project Aiko, the first Dragon Ball movie, some Kiniku Man movies. I think I'm gonna go with Fist of the North Star. I think I'm gonna go with that.
That was Project Aiko, you said?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be my choice.
Too. Wow, it's hard to choose.
Yeah.
I like Project Aiko, but
Castle in the Sky is really great too.
Yeah, it's No Nausicaa. That's like I put that one down like on my list of on my list of Ghibli movies. Laptacum is near the bottom, and not because it's a bad movie, but just because it's kind of unremarkable story wise. It's neat. It's a neat movie. I like that movie, but in the grand scheme of things, it's like it's definitely no Porco Rosso. It's definitely no Nausicaa.
Ghibli oeuvre.
Yeah.
Right. It's like had they only made Laputa, everyone would like it a lot more.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's a totally good movie and totally blows away the competition most other films. But yeah, no, in the grand scheme of Ghibli, not very far up there.
I gotta watch it again, but I usually put it towards the top.
I think it's out on Blu-ray pretty soon here, so
Ghibli list.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you Sweet. Will get
yeah,
a
but
chance
I definitely choose Eiko. There's just you can feel the fun that they had with that movie in a way that I you know, maybe like Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know, you can tell that they're just having so much fun doing what they're doing. There are very few movies I feel that way about.
The fun leaps off the screen and into your eyes. Yeah.
That's a back of the box quote, man. Whoever that gets license rescued, you should say, "Hey, man, check out this pull quote." All right.
Man, I hardly ever get pull quotes. Wasting them anyway.
All right. Redneck Otaku, what happens if anime basically becomes free, no paid content? Does the medium creatively suffer, or can it survive? Well, that is a big question. I would argue that if no one is paying for anime, period, no more will be made. So,
I think that it's interesting to look at the way the kind of music industry has gone, where, like, you know, it used to be by the end of the 80s and 90s, you had all these big record companies, and there was that concept of selling out that kind of doesn't exist as much anymore, where, like, the stakes are so low that, I mean, the model is that you give your music away for free, and the way bands make money is through other sources. So I think we're kind of living in this weird future where all media is kind of free and it's all available all the time, and, you know, everything is adjusting around it. So we're kind of already there, but I mean, obviously it's not free in Japan. It's not free to make it. And cartoons are very expensive and extremely labor intense. So they can't really exist without that money. But like I was saying earlier about ICE and the AKB48 money, if that's where the money's coming from, like, that's a different source. Also, I wanted to mention Rio Rainbow Gate, that casino funded, the slot machine funded.
Pachinko money.
Yeah, it's all the pachinko money. Well, not pachinko, it's slot machine. So Pachislow.
Right.
So Pachislow money. And then, like, those new Evangelion movies are funded by, it's my understanding, Doritos and slot machines, where the casinos approached the producers and were like, "Can you guys make 3 more movies? Here's a ton of casino money." Like, that's a different sort of price structure than how her name is previously being made.
The only thing we ask is that you rename her to Cool Ranch Asuka.
My Asuka, you're so zesty today.
It's a fiesta of flavor. All right.
We're relocating Nerve to the Hidden Valley.
Well, there was in Code Geass where they constantly ate Pizza Hut.
Yeah.
Pizza
Hut.
I mean, that stuff doesn't bother me because that's how stuff gets financed. Like, that's right, the reality of how TV shows and movies get financed. I don't care. And frankly, I prefer someone drinking a Coca-Cola, conspicuously drinking a Coca-Cola, to someone conspicuously drinking something that is clearly supposed to be Coke, but isn't quite. So it's like Quarka-Cola or something like that. And it just kind of pulls you out of it.
McDonald's.
Yeah, exactly. That stuff, it pulls me out. It's fine. Get your money however you can. Just
have the characters work at McDonald's, like real McDonald's.
Yeah, I think that there is always going to be a way to monetize it somehow. And the technology is getting so cheap and easy to use that, you know, you could have, maybe not yet, but I think soon you will be able to have a studio of maybe 3 people who are able to put together a show of the same level of quality that, you know, we're accustomed to seeing from a late night show in Japan.
You're nuts.
So, well, all right. Maybe
it will take them.
I can't see the future.
It'll take them 15 years to make that show.
No, I don't think so. I mean, the writing is always what it will live and die on, right? You can't skimp on the writing.
Well, it is anime. I think they constantly skip on the writing.
That seems to be sometimes the least of their concerns.
I guess I'm not talking about what will succeed. I'm talking about what I might want to pay for.
You never buy anything.
No. You guys get most of this stuff for free, and then you have do nothing but watch it.
You didn't even, when we moved out of our roommate's place, you didn't even own Akira, and it was like your favorite movie ever.
Well, I don't like stuff.
You don't own. That's Noah doesn't like owning
kind of
the physical
strange,
media.
A strange otaku, and like, you know, people have argued that I am not. I don't even fit the model because I'm not acquisitive. You know, I don't like to have collections of things. And I see myself moving from one apartment to the next, and it's terrible if you have things. So,
no, I agree with that, but I'm a collector. I like my big, stupid library of movies that I, in reality, don't really revisit that often, but I like having it.
We have a friend who has a robot collection, from the 30s, 40s, and 50s
guns,
and stuff. Yeah,
and
ray guns.
Star Wars.
And it is awesome, and I am so envious. And at the same time, there's no way I could do it.
All right. Okay, again from Bassman PhD. Have there been any movies adapted from an anime or manga that you thought were good? Speed Racer is a good movie. I like that.
Live
movie.
Action we're talking about.
Yeah, live action. That's a good movie.
I didn't see the Speed Racer movie.
It is extremely successful at what it is trying to do. It's a little difficult to fully say, like, oh, wow, I love this movie, because there's a lot of really goofy shit in it, but... for what they were trying to do, it is a wild success. Like, they did exactly what they set out to make, and it's a lot of fun. Like, that movie is a lot of fun.
Are we talking strictly American? Like,
no, well, I mean, yeah,
don't have
that's
much to draw from.
That's what comes to mind. I mean, if he's talking about live action, and I have to narrow this down somewhat because it just says, have there ever been any movies adapted from an anime or a manga? Of course,
okay.
But in terms of live action movies, the Japanese aren't really better at it than we are.
Certainly not.
I didn't like those live action Death Notes. I didn't. They rarely release anything that is really good.
I like the first
good.
Nana movie.
Oh yeah, that was okay. Yeah, I was okay with that.
Yeah,
I find the shoujo stuff is just better. It's just better as an adaptation. It just works better because it's just, you know, these are just little dramas. They don't have to try. They don't have to attempt special effects. So that's good. I'm looking forward to that Phoenix Wright movie, though.
They said it couldn't be done.
No, they didn't.
No, they didn't say that.
No,
they said we are going to do this.
They said this is a foregone conclusion.
Bad idea. They said maybe they said it was a bad idea. But yeah. All right. James Lung Zero has two questions. Is Akira Kurosawa's Ran a little overrated?
Hmm.
I don't think so. I only have like a one movie poster hanging behind my television,
it's funny
Ran.
That, yeah, you should mention this because
the poster frame broke, like the glass on it had broke, and we didn't repair it and just kind of hung it behind the TV. And then I hung a wreath up for Christmas, so I put the Ran poster down kind of below the TV. And then I unplugged my computer the other day, ramming my hand into the broken glass. And although I did not need stitches, it did bleed a lot.
So Aaron suffered a Ren-related injury.
It's true.
Yeah.
Still worth saving the poster.
Poster's getting its vengeance on you for letting it sit there in a broken frame.
I like it. I like it a lot. I like Lear, though. So is it overrated? I don't know. In comparison to what? I don't think so.
To Kurosawa's other films?
I don't think so. I don't think it's overrated. I mean, I don't really think any of his movies are overrated. Like, they're all, most of them are pretty good. Yeah. Ran being one of the really good ones.
I personally
like Rashomon more, but this is the Ghibli thing again. It's which of these masterpieces
totally
do you like the best? Well, they're all really good, but if I had to choose, I'd go with Rashomon.
Rashomon is probably the most engaging, interesting one.
It is, but I wouldn't rewatch it, but I'll rewatch Ran a bunch of times.
Oh, really? Because I think that Rashomon has more rewatchability. But
I don't like reliving an uncomfortable rape scene.
Ah, yes, there is that. Yes, no, it's
not that there's not a similar scene in.
All right. Also from James Lung, what anime drinking games do you guys like to play?
Well, if we're playing one, it means that it's something that we really don't want to have to watch.
I was thinking about reviewing Kobato as a drinking game, but I don't know if that would be appropriate for the readers, where it's like, drink every time her stuffed animal falls in the mud. Drink every time it gives her a bad score. Drink every time she fixes a broken heart. Drink if she fails to fix a broken heart.
Yeah.
I don't really do that. I don't do the drinking game thing. Like, if I'm gonna drink while I'm watching anime, the quote unquote game is pour glass, press play,
right.
Drink and watch whatever it is you're watching. And take a shot every time someone's, you know, boobs are in the camera or whatever. I mean,
It would definitely be, you know, some moe show where it's like, you know, drink every time the little girl says goo or whatever. Yeah.
Drink every time she sends feminism back 20 years. Yeah.
But then you're just drinking continuously. Man.
Are we in the, like, Paleozoic era?
The dawn of time. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, no.
It's good. The next question.
All right. Okay. Oh, this is particular for you guys. Land of Obscusion asks, out of all the unusual manga genres you've seen, which one still makes you think, really, there's manga about this?
There's new ones every year. So the ones this year, I know, like, Bamboo and I were thrilled to find more, like, sweep curling. The curling, the winter sport, where you throw giant rocks on ice. It's really big in Canada. There's not one, but at least two curling titles that we found. And that I have stuff in the panel. I actually bought one of them. But the two new ones that I like this year are, I kind of answered this guy on Twitter already, but one of them is called Thermo Roman, and it's about a guy who really likes going to Japanese baths, and then he falls through the bottom of one of them and ends up in ancient Rome, where he is in a Roman bath, and then he teaches Roman people about, like, Japanese, like, hot springs customs and bathing customs or whatever. And then he keeps traveling back and forth through town. It got really popular. I think that one was also up for an award with Chihafura, and I just didn't know what it was about at the time. But it's getting, like, a live action movie. They're on, like, volume 5. So I'm calling it, like, Hot Tub Time Machine, the manga. It's like Roman statues on the cover all the time. And the other one that I just found out about a little while ago is called Working Centaur. It's a salaryman manga about a centaur.
Sign me up.
I don't really know that much about it besides the cover and a single page that someone translated.
Yeah, the one that strikes me is still the urology manga.
Yeah, that's
all the little
weird
happy penises on the cover.
Jeez, that has 11 or 12 volumes. I think
I know. It's a long-running series, and
Ipongi, great urologist. The great urologist.
But there's another urology manga.
Oh, yeah?
Competing with it, yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
So not just one title, but
two urology manga. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's kind of like, look, they've covered every possible subject. There's nothing you can come up with that's so wacky there's no manga about it. Like, there's probably a manga about it if you can come up with it. So, yeah.
We do ask people at the end of the panel to come up with stuff, and some people have come up with some interesting ones. Like, so far, we don't know if there's a topiary manga about cutting hedges in a garden to be shaped like different animals. We've not found that manga yet.
Also, croquet.
I'm sure there's
a croquet. No, there's that one about old men playing gate ball.
That's gate ball.
There's got to be. I am sure there's a curling manga. There's, like, several curling
manga.
Yeah,
no, you'd think.
I'm sure there's got to be croquet. And I'm sure people will let us know in the forums if there is one.
Thanks, guys.
Croquet is the same. Oh, wait, no, cricket is different.
But very different.
Yeah, but I think there is a cricket manga.
There's
lacrosse manga. Yeah. So, of course, there's going to be cricket manga.
I wonder if there's highlight manga. There must be.
Maybe.
all right. LacunaCraft asks, given the rise of streaming for anime, how long do you think it will be before fan subbing totally dies out? As long as there are teenagers with egos and time on their hands, fan subbing will probably never die out.
Yeah, I don't think there's always going to be something that's, like, really old that nobody's ever translated, or something weird or obscure, or, like, something that's so small it's below the radar. Oh, I wanted to bring up, like, it's become, like, a kind of mainstream thing in China where people will fan sub American shows so other people can watch them. But we were watching this one Chinese cartoon called Miss Puff.
Oh, yeah, Miss Puff.
And it
you
was
heard
like,
about this?
It was super cool. Mm-mm. There's a lot of, like, live action and, like, After Effects animation. It's kind of high end stuff. And it was all, like, cracked down and pulled off of
it,
all the pirate sites and YouTube. And I have not seen a bit of it since. It's really hard to search for the words Miss Puff and not come up with other stuff.
Sex in the City, done in China, animated.
It's
about an upwardly mobile young woman who is trying to get her professional life and her love life sort of rearranged. And it's really excellent. We've only seen one 8-minute episode.
Yeah, there's a lot of different animation styles. They're trying a lot of stuff. It was really, really interesting stuff. And I've not been able to find another episode. Like, it was completely wiped clean from the... Oh, the other thing about fan subbing, I mean, we talk about it a lot in the English-speaking world, but, you know, if you only, I don't know, speak a Finnish or something, like, there's got to be a community for different language groups. Although, who knows? In the future, maybe everyone can learn all these languages all the time.
Yeah, I think that once you can plug a chip in and get whatever language you need,
oh,
I think
fan subbing
will probably die.
Yeah, I guess they would do it. Unless it's all like Google Translate and you just get kind of the gist of what they were saying.
Chuodori asks, is there any manga or anime series that, despite loving it first, you now hate with the wrath of an angry god?
That's a good question.
I think Wrath of an Angry God's a little extreme, but I would say that it's like I used to fucking love Slayers, and now I can't watch it.
Huh.
Like, it's just not funny.
Well, I'm with you on that, and I never super loved it, but it has certainly diminished in my esteem.
I stopped watching Naruto a long time ago.
I don't know if that really counts.
But though, I didn't start off super loving it. I didn't love it until episode 30 or episode 26 or whatever I looked up.
And I think the question is not, is there a series that, you know, turns to shit? It's, is there something that you liked a lot
and now you hate?
It hasn't changed, you know,
but
now
you
don't like it. Because, like, the end of Karakano almost ruins everything else, right?
Oh, like the manga ending?
Yeah, the manga
ending. Right. I did that comic early on in my manga reviewing days where the Karakano, the anime, his interesting circumstances, it just kind of ends. And so I started collecting the manga from the exact point that the anime series ends to find out, you know, what happens. Like, it ends in the middle of an arc. Like, they started a new arc. Like, what's going on? So finally, when they released the final volume in English, when I read it, I was like, you know, the comic has me where I'm stabbing myself in the eye with a knife. My hair is catching on fire. I'm like slapping the author because it's gone so far afield from everything I liked about it that it's just unbelievable and annoying. And apparently a similar ending to like the Twilight ending.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's a really good question. I that's something that I'd have to really think about.
I mean, a lot of the stuff that I was really into when I started out as an anime fan, I'm not a fan of anymore, or certainly wouldn't watch now, even when they resurrected it. Like Tenchi Muyo, you know, I used to love Tenchi. Now I can't watch it. It's just it's a harem show. I'm not really into harem shows.
No time for Tenchi.
I never made it through Sailor Moon, like Sailor Stars, the final season where it's like a boys band that I tried to start watching it, but it had been too long already, even though it only been 4 or 5 years since I'd watched Sailor Moon so adamantly. But I was just like, can't do it. Can't turn back the clock.
I can't go home again. Yeah.
Yu Yu Hakusho. I never realized until we were rewatching.
Oh, God.
Like, I had seen the whole thing.
I hadn't really.
Raw, so I didn't know exactly what was going on.
Yeah.
And I guess because I was, you know, a teenager, I had a lot more tolerance for repetition because there's a lot of it. But now watching it again, my God, it's like paper thin.
Yeah.
It's what was I thinking? How did it hold my attention?
That was a lot of people's first exposure to the tournament show. And the first time you see one of those, it's pretty cool.
If you've never seen another tournament show,
exactly.
More grabbing.
I was in a book off a couple of weeks ago trying to track down copies of Earth Girl Arjuna. And in the area where I live, there's a lot of used anime in the bookstores, especially in the book offs. And the one that I went to had a whole bunch of random volumes of Flame of Recca.
Which
made me laugh. That show, I think, is probably the most like blatant we're just ripping this other show off that it is just Yu Yu Hakusho with a different coat of paint and like a slightly different storyline, and it's really junky. Like, the animation's really junky.
Yeah,
character designs are all super like the dustbin of the 90s, like a show that deserves to be forgotten. But yeah, every time those two sort of go together, Yu Yu Hakusho and Flame of Recca, the sort of swap meet version of Yu Yu Hakusho.
Well, and I remember when that's what the video room pretty much consisted of, was Flame of Recca, Ghost Sweeper
Mikami,
Mikami, and Yu Yu Hakusho, and
dust covered
Borg Man.
Yeah, this is a copy in like episodes 21 through 23 of Kimigari Orange Road or something like that. Yeah, yes, indeed. Super Deformed asks, For Noah, is the alignment system and strength is the alignment system a strength or weakness in Dungeons and Dragons? And he put
this
hashtag.
This is going to be about 3 hours, I think.
Right. He put like hashtag.
Yeah, game. That was the hashtag 3 hour podcast.
I think it's a feature. I think it's pretty quick and dirty, and you shouldn't really think about it that hard. I know that it really does spawn more geek arguments than it was really designed to. But it is handy, and I do think that in a sort of fantasy genre setting, you can slate people into one of those 9 alignments.
You use that on people in real life. Like, you think of things in those terms all the time. Like, that is the filter through which Noah
That's not just alignment.
Sees the
that's
world.
Just
stats.
Yeah. RPGs
For Super Deformed, what do you think my alignment is?
Lovely.
Yeah, I was about to say, tread lightly.
I already know what you think.
Chaotic evil. That's what he's going to say.
That's what the forum thinks.
I can't answer this.
Oh, sir.
No.
Okay.
No. It's you're lawful lovely. That's But of course, you know, alignments can't actually map them onto human beings, because human beings are far more complex than that. Most of them, I do know some people who really are chaotic neutral, and there's no way that they, you know, they don't fit anywhere else. They're just nuts. So, but by and large, you can't, when you're dealing with like literature or something, these characters, they don't have alignments. But for D&D, I think it works well.
All right.
Okay. How did I know we get Dungeons & Dragons questions? All right. ABCB Tom wants to know, why don't more anime fans care about manga when so many classic series come from manga, and the rise in often complained about moe anime comes from the influence of visual novels and light novels, whereas there's adult manga still out there. So I guess, why don't anime fans who complain about the influence of visual novels and stuff go to manga more often? They do seem to be two different fandoms.
I parsed this question a little bit differently. I don't know. I had a hard time reading that tweet. But like, it is kind of weird that there's not more crossover. Like, the fans who go to manga next are not all the same fans who go to anime next, although I think a lot of the staff is the same. And when manga next first started, I noticed like the fans were kind of a lot younger. I think it's just like a matter of do you read a lot of books or not? Like, are you interested in comics or just television, and not a lot of people read all that much
anymore.
I think. Well, it's also like a matter of like, we can, living here without cars and commuting by train, we happen to read a lot of books, and so do like in New York. Uniquely,
oh yeah,
in the rest
another
of the country.
Another advantage to being an anime fan in New York.
You can
or
read manga on the train.
You can read manga on the train.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You actually have
while
to commute,
you commute in, yeah. And I think that's true in Japan too, where like most people commute to work by train, so they have something like 4 times as many people read books there, or like they publishing industry is a lot stronger because people just read a lot more because they're not driving everywhere. You know, you can't read manga while you drive.
Yeah, don't I know it?
You're like, I've tried.
You can't really get manga on tape either. It doesn't. Something is lost. I find they, I mean, each is its own medium, and I know that I prefer anime to manga because I find anime more immersive, and that matters a lot to me. I know a lot of people who feel the opposite. I'm engaged in moving pictures with sound more than I am in my head when I read a manga. When manga first hit, and who was it? Bridget Alverson, who's talked about the satisfying chunk, that you get a satisfying chunk of story in manga.
Also,
I never felt that way, really. You flip through a manga so quickly, I don't get that sort of feeling of satisfaction that I get in a half-hour episode of whatever.
Yeah,
as long as it's not, you know, filler.
Well, my other thing is, like, I think when you pick one or the other to consume that story, you end up being better off than if you try and consume both of them, because in a lot of cases where, like, I read the manga and then I watched the anime, like, the anime is usually such a loyal adaptation that it's just, like, repeated material, so you just feel like it's a rerun if it's too close to the same story. So you're just better picking one and sticking with it. But, like, with the satisfying chunk of story, if I read a volume of Claymore, and I've read a couple of them, I feel ripped off because they only take like 5 minutes to read and cost $11. But then like, because there's not that much like dialogue, there's a lot of fighting. But yeah. Then if I watch the anime of Claymore, I feel more like I got my money's worth because, you know, there's action and sound and whatever. But like there are some like I really like the Bakuman manga, at least volumes 2 through 8. And it's sort of stopped being good. But like the anime is nearly impossible to watch if you've already read the manga because it's just like one manga chapter per episode. And so the pacing seems like insane.
Hmm. And it works much better to have a manga about drawing manga than an anime about drawing manga.
Yeah, that too. I think they should have just done the anime about making anime and it could have been the Bakuman anyway. But like, but if you already just started watching Bakuman and you're not interested in reading it as manga, then you're just better off sticking with it as anime because you're going to get 100% repeated material. Like, there's no point.
I also feel that the way that manga is created, it the story will eventually run off the rails. Like, it's a given. Or at least for 98%+ because it's going to keep running as long as it's popular. And the schedule that the mangaka has to keep is such where, you know, you barely have time to breathe, let alone plot.
For weekly series. And yeah, once you've sold past a certain number of graphic novels, no one's going to cancel you, so you can just keep going.
Right.
For an absurd amount of time.
And certainly with filler, this is brought into real life with in anime, but in a limited run series, if you get 13 episodes of anime or 26 episodes, you can get a full arc in and it's done, you know? And that certainly appeals to me a lot more than the ongoing sort of soap opera series that is every shoujo or shonen manga.
Wasn't it really weird? Restaurant Paradiso is like one or maybe two volumes of manga and 11 episodes of show. Somehow it's insane. If you're wondering if that one seems slow, that's why.
Stretching it out. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I prefer anime because I'm a movie guy. Like, that's my preferred creative medium, movies. And so, therefore, I'm more of an anime guy. But I will say, like, I will obviously go to the manga if the anime's over or it goes into filler or whatever, and I just want to know more of the story. Yeah, of course I'll go to the manga. No problem. And, you know, I'm a big art guy, and so if the art's really extravagant or special, then, you know, I'll gravitate towards the manga. But I really don't see any point in reading something and then just watching that exact story animated. There's so much to see and so much to do. Why am I wasting my life watching this? I read this. I don't need to see it played out in front of me in limited animation. You know, I only need to see that story once. And so... yeah, and that's kind of my attitude towards that.
There are exceptions. I love the Black Lagoon manga every bit as much as I love the show. And because the pictures aren't moving, you really can scrutinize the detail. And I picked up a lot of things that I missed having seen the show maybe twice through.
Yeah, there are exceptions like that. One of the big ones for me is Hellsing. And I like that. Primarily for the art in the manga, and even the new OVAs do not capture his art that well. It looks better certainly than the TV show does, but that art is so specific and psychedelic that you kind of, you know, it's tough to capture it in animation, and it just works better as a still image. I like those OVAs, but they don't quite capture it. So there's Berserk's the same way.
They can't
really capture that art in animation because it would just be too goddamn expensive. So. that's the difference. And just, you know, your personal favorites, of course you're also going to want to read the book version, you know, or also want to see the anime version, like, but you know, not for most things. I think you have to, you know, choose how you're spending your time there. All right, we should move on.
Okay.
NeoCloud asks, what do you think anime could learn from Western animation and vice versa?
Different methods of funding.
New formula.
Different, like, pitch production process. It is a really weird and, like, our friend the Angry Otaku is back in town, but he can talk about it. But I think in general it's something interesting for fans to learn about that don't know about it. Just sort of the structure of, like, where does the money come from when you're, you know, making pilots or green lighting shows, and like, who's paying for it? I'm just saying, you know, follow the money, or what is it? They, like, in The Wire, you know. Right. Follow the money. But like the Japanese television production model is extremely different from the way it is in America. And even our like cable TV system is really different. Like, cable's not as big in Japan. People watch a lot more broadcast television, and it's really hard to get people to subscribe to cable. And even when it comes to, like, film distribution is also extremely different. And Ed Chavez was telling us a little bit about that, that, like, the way Japanese films are distributed even in Japan is, like, a weird sort of roadshow, like, the way they kind of distribute indie, like, independent films here, where
it's
not
tiered, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, I think it's worth looking at both of those models. But I don't know how much, like, you know, I don't think the average U.S., like, an American TV producer or a movie producer, they're not really thinking much about, like, the same kinds of things that a Japanese movie producer or a TV producer would think about. Like, I don't know if, how much they would want to bother studying the other method. I don't know. But I'm interested in that sort of thing because I've worked, you know, in the TV industry and all that.
I would say that the thing that Japan can learn from Western animation is how to do CG, because they're still not very good at it.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
The thing that Western animation can learn from Japanese animation is it's okay to make adult animation that is drama. Not everything has to be a comedy. Adults who enjoy animation enjoy drama and mystery and all kinds of other stuff, not just comedy. So roll the dice on that one sometime, maybe. I don't know. Those are like an area of weakness in Western animation is there really aren't any adult animated dramas. And boy, they really have not figured out CG yet over in Japan. So
yeah,
they still think they can cut frames and it's going to look good. It's like, nope, it's not going to look good, guys. It's going to look herky jerky and shitty. Stop cutting frames. It doesn't work in CG. Hey,
I guess there's just a higher tolerance for it. Because you look at like Hong Kong films, the CG is laughable. I guess it doesn't hurt the profitability of the end product.
Oh, yeah, one time we were like in it. This is kind of a weird tangent. But we were in like a Chinese restaurant around Chinese New Year, and there was like the craziest CG program playing with like dancing, singing children, and some of like the worst like 3D like CG going on in a almost like a psychedelic way. That's not what it was intended to look like. But I had this sudden vision of like, oh, this is what it's like in other parts of the world. They have access to Maya and not maybe the same number of experts at using it or something. I don't know.
Third world CG.
Third world CG. Oh, yeah. Like there were some trailers for that film from somewhere in Africa, like Namibia or somewhere, that were pretty wild. Like someone got a copy of After Effects and made their own small films.
Oh, you're talking about that thing that was Nigerian, wasn't it?
Was it? Yeah, like a Nigerian feature film.
Zach, you must have seen this.
Did I? I don't know.
It was making the rounds. It's just this incredibly, it's like handheld video. There's terrible CG that's stolen from a bunch of Hollywood movies. It's got the alien in it from Alien and, you know, Predator, but they look terrible.
I don't think I saw that.
Huh. Oh, it's pretty good. Okay. Well,
that's the future of film.
You look that up.
But I love terrible things, so now I'm going to find it.
It was like the pre-keyed After Effects effects.
It's not for gunshots. It's terrible. See, because this is good bad.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's made with a lot of heart.
Right. Where someone was like, finally, I have all of the cheap technology and free and or pirated software that I need to make my Hollywood-influenced film, you know?
Right.
I don't know. That's kind of a cool time. And then distribute it instantly to everyone all over the world via the internet.
Like, well, it's really hard to find outsider art in cinema because so much just takes place inside the system.
Well, now it's not
now
hard
you can.
To find. Yeah, you don't need to tape trade to find those films anymore.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
All right. Jaron Imenich also asks, how is Eastern fantasy represented compared to Western fantasy in anime? Well, I think you get both kinds.
Yeah.
You certainly get Western-style high fantasy, and you get Eastern-style fantasy all the time. So,
yeah, I do like how they pull from every kind of mythology, where, like, shows will just be like, this time we're pulling Scandinavian mythology and then throwing it up there.
Actually, it's more like, these 80 times we're going to pull from Norse mythology.
Right.
And then these other 5 times we'll pull from things you've never heard of or something else. I don't know what is with the obsession with Norse mythology, but if I hear one more show that's got some mention of Yggdrasil in it, enough.
What are you going to do?
I don't. Nothing. I will sit here and stew about it.
But I do think, like, when it comes to some, like, Chinese mythology, they kind of expect you to, you're already familiar with the story, like with Hero Tale or 12 Kingdoms or something. It's sort of like, you're probably already familiar with the mandate of heaven and how that kind of government system works, but we're not in the West. I don't know.
Yeah, I also really appreciate how, for them, Christianity is just another sort of mythos to pull from.
Yeah.
We tend to prioritize it because
it's like
that's
a sensitive hot topic, kind of. You wouldn't just, it's a sensitive topic in the West.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You wouldn't just throw, like my Japanese tutor, when he first moved here, he took a couple pages from Saint Young Men, the manga where Jesus and Buddha are roommates. It's a gag manga from like the 2000s, and he showed it to like his class as like an example of, I don't know, some manga and maybe translating some parts. But then a couple of the students were like really offended, like deeply. And then he was like, what? He doesn't, because in Japan, like a lot of, I mean, anime characters will sometimes say something like, I need some help with this. God, Jesus, Buddha, whoever.
Anybody.
Like equal weight. It's not how monotheism tends to work. But like that doesn't play in the Deep South, you know, like you can't have that kind of thing in America. And
Yeah.
I like that too, that they just kind of treat it all as a big toy box in which to play. So, you know, you get some pretty funny, wacky stuff happening with revered historical and religious figures. And, well, that's just amusing. Here in America, though, we'll never get, you know, a fighting game that has Jesus Christ as a character in it. You will get that in Japan.
See in the next Super Robot Wars?
Yeah.
Jesus,
that would be great.
Versus Moses. Fight.
Who wouldn't play that?
It's an instant seller. It's just the marketing that's a problem.
But it also means that they're able to pull some of the more esoteric parts of Christianity, which is also sort of Judaism. I remember it was a real shock to me, and it's hard to kind of remember this because Evangelion has become such a huge thing. But way, way back in the day, when I was very first watching it and had no idea what I was watching, you know, they call them angels. And I must have watched 12 or 13 episodes before it suddenly, oh, right, like biblical angels.
They're
like
using names.
Real biblical angels with all the eyes and the wings and the crazy shit and all the nonsense. That's what they mean. That was really cool.
Your friend of mine, Gerald, asks... For Noah,
Gerald said all his questions were jokes.
What? So. Yeah, I know. I'm going to ask him anyway. What anime best encapsulates your many economic philosophies?
I mean, my answer, I guess, would be I think that what they do in Spice and Wolf is really interesting. Interesting in a way that apparently the books are not. I wouldn't start out with the crazy monetary depreciation thing that is the
first
economic concept.
Oh my God, like weighing coins. That was so boring.
But the notion of trade and sort of how that fits into society. It's really interesting, like the history of trade. And I think that it's very well addressed in Spice and Wolf in a way that people who wouldn't think that this would be an interesting topic might find it interesting.
Yeah, Spice and Wolf really makes learning come alive.
Hey, I'm just saying, if in Econ 101, if the class is really good, at the end of class, you wheel in the TV and play them an episode of Spice and Wolf.
Hey, yeah, why not? I mean, you know, edit out all the, you know, nudity, but yeah. incidental nudity in that show.
Why are they going to pay attention otherwise?
Right, yeah. Oh, there's a naked, you know, 17-year-old or whatever coming up. All right. Ludono asks, are forum users getting better or worse over the years, specifically on ANN or on Shelf Life articles? Well, our forum users, I mean, maybe it's just my perception. I think they've gotten better, but I've also mellowed out a lot when it comes to the forums, so maybe I just don't really notice it, but well, we don't have that many aggressive douche nozzles anymore, at least not that we still have some. Of course, every forum has that, but I don't know. I like our forums. I complain about them a lot because it's part of my job to police them, so
right.
Yeah,
right.
But I mean, I like our forums. Of course.
So are you reading all the threads all the time? Like you have to read every post?
No. I mean, we have moderators for that. And like, I don't moderate like the anime forum. We have other people for that. But I mostly keep track on the TalkBack forum and in the community forum. But TalkBack, yeah, I monitor TalkBack really closely. Not only because it's part of my job to police that, but that's feedback for what I spend my entire day working on. So
right.
you know, yeah, I keep a really close eye on it. But I don't know. I mean, even some of the a-holes, I'm okay with them. You know, like I can kind of see where they're coming from. I might not agree with them, but I can kind of see where they're coming from. And I try to understand people, you know. It gives you better perspective on, like, all right, well, you know, this guy's angry about this. Maybe he's going through some other stuff. Maybe I'm not going to, you know, tired of having a bad day, man, you know.
But, yeah, I think it's moderated pretty tightly, too. Like, if things go too far off topic, stuff gets wiped out of threads. But I think that kind of tight policing makes it stay, you know, relatively on topic in a good way.
Shelf life. For him, at least as long as Aaron's term has been, I think it's gotten much better, probably because the guys who were totally flipping out initially probably stopped reading.
Maybe either they stopped reading or they you know, dealt with it and it got over it, I guess. You know, certainly the readership hasn't dropped or anything, but yeah, no, I mean, they either calmed down or stopped hazing you. I mean, Bamboo wrote that for a really long time, and when you first came in, yeah, they were giving you a lot of shit. But you were taking over for someone who was fairly beloved, so, I mean, that was going to be a tough gig no matter how you did it, and now it's been a couple of years, and people just have accepted you, so.
Yeah, they're sort of used to it.
You have your own readers now.
I've got to say, a lot of things that I wouldn't expect the forum readers to pick up on, just this last week, they're in Dirty Pair, in those OVAs, the Bearcat Moogie.
The coral?
Yeah, it's actually from an A.E. Van Vogt story. He's a sci-fi author from the 50s. That's really interesting to me. I didn't think that any of the forum readers were going to care. But a number of people commented on that, and that's really cool. It shows that, you know, it's a pretty diverse forum.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like, in this line of work, when what you do has the forum's feedback, has a comment section, honestly, like, when you get positive affirmation that people like what you're doing, it is the greatest thing. I mean, that's the best. When someone's like, oh, I really loved this, a really great article, or really great show, or I really loved it this week, or whatever. It's great. I mean, and that is a good feeling. And most people who do this for a living will attest to that. I'm sure you probably started enjoying Shelf Life a lot more when they backed the fuck off.
You think?
Oh, a bit. I don't, negative attention is still attention. But, Oh, no, I don't know. I've been, you know, on the internet or the, you know, BBSs that predated the internet before that. So getting a lot of replies to something always makes me happy.
Yeah.
It's definitely better than, like, you know, starting your own anime blog or manga blog where there's like no comments.
2 years worth of posts, not a single comment. Yeah.
Right. Or there's 2 comments and they're both like, I liked this show. And like nothing responding to anything you said. Just, I read the title and then I left a comment.
Yeah. No, it's nice having an audience. It's nice knowing you have one. That's it's good. It's very validating. All right. Also from Ludono, Shonen Jump Alpha, will it succeed? No longer has physical value, so what does it do? Can it do to succeed? I hope it does. I hope that works out for them. I want everyone to make money, so that would be good.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Now, do you even know about this? That Shonen Jump, or did they stop doing the paper edition?
Yeah, no more paper. It's all on the iPad and your Kindles and your Nooks and stuff now. And it's $1, and it's 2 weeks after the Japanese publication. You get the next chapters. They're all caught up. It's like you get like 6 or 7 series, and still not fast enough for the Super Scanlation kiddies. But they're trying to fight it. They're trying.
They'll get there.
Yeah.
With that.
Digital publishing is this big, wide open thing right now. No one's fully figured it out, just like no one's fully figured out internet streaming yet. These are new frontiers, and we're all learning all the time. So it's too early to say, what can they do to make this a success? Because nobody really knows. Right now, we're in the throw everything at the wall and see what sticks phase. So in a couple of years, we'll have a much better idea of how this is all going to work.
Sure, but I think the iPad is going to stick. I mean, I think that you know, the market is only going to increase, and I think that this medium, I guess, because I guess that's what it is, will work. I do expect that they're going to be able to make the transition. I don't know so much. I don't I know more about what that will look like than I do what streaming will look like in terms of the model. So I think they'll be successful.
Mm. All right. Again from Ludono, dubbed anime openings, thing of the past, or something we might see again?
For kids' shows, there's always a place for that.
Yeah, you still see it every now and then. Funimation did a little bit for One Piece with Vic Mignogna. I don't particularly care for that. I think it always sounds cheesy. I don't think I've ever seen like a dubbed opening that I actually really liked.
I saw one that was like a fan translation dubbed opening of the Durarara theme song, where the guy had rewritten the lyrics and sang it himself, and the miking wasn't that great, but I thought it was pretty...
Oh, that thing on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The guy who did his own YouTube dubbed Durarara opening was... that was pretty fun.
In fact, there's a whole bunch. There's...
Really? Everyone's doing their own version
of the same
song?
Yeah, it's the same person or two people. They also have a version of the opening to Welcome to the NHK. It's really good.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah. So I think it could be well done, but of course the folks who are doing them for kids shows.
Right.
So the quality doesn't have to be there in order to get the fun across to the kids who are watching.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea. I mean, for kids shows, like you said, I think it totally works. I don't think it usually works in most of the contests. It's not like it can't or not like it's never been done well. It's just that normally it's not that great.
Right. There's pretty much no need.
Right, yeah, why bother? It's just a song. Okay, again from Ludono. Most anticipated superhero movie, Avengers or Dark Knight Rises or Ghost Rider? Well, not Ghost Rider.
I'm not really a fan of superheroes, although I do, like, I specifically started reading manga because I don't like superhero comics, and I wanted to read comics, not superhero comics. But I do watch, I didn't even watch the last X-Men movie. I heard it was good, but I didn't
see
it.
It is. It's good. You'd like it, I think. It's
maybe.
Good. It's a very solid movie. You both would probably like that one.
Yeah, it looked pretty good. I in as much as I'm interested in, you know, we don't see many live action movies anymore.
Oh, now I have a really weird work schedule because I work from like 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. and like that makes it really hard to see a movie. Like I could see it, the matinee, the first show of the day without Noah, or we basically have to go on a Saturday or a Sunday.
Which is when we're
doing shelf life stuff.
Watching anime, so it sort of crowds
it's
out
really like cut down
the other entertainment, but yeah,
not that we were seeing that many movies anyway, because in New York costs more than it would to buy a DVD to go and see a movie. So
Dark Knight Rising, yep, of the three. I don't have that much riding on Avengers. I know that lots of our friends are fans.
Did we see the last Batman movie?
We did, and it was very good.
Wasn't there one?
We saw it with Jeff.
No, that was a couple years ago.
It was a couple years
I think
years
there's
ago.
Been another one since then that we didn't see.
No.
What was the last Batman movie?
Makes a difference.
Dark Knight was the last Batman movie.
Oh, okay. So, yeah.
Everyone in the world saw that. Like, if you didn't see it, you're somehow, I don't know where you're at.
Not of this earth.
I thought maybe there was another one since then.
No. This is the next one. And frankly, like, I'm looking forward to the Avengers. I think it's going to be fun. Batman, I got to admit, like, it's going to make the internet so fucking annoying for like a week. It's already to the point where like anything gets said about the new Batman movie and that's all anyone is talking about for like at least 7 or 8 hours. And it's just, oh God, why is everybody so obsessed with Batman? But I mean, I'm looking forward to it and all, but my expectations are like, yeah, hey, that's going to be good. Not like, oh man, like I'm not sitting here like quivering in anticipation and like I'm already kind of tired of hearing about it. So I just want the movie to come out. I just want to see it. I kind of want it to be over. Like I just kind of want that movie to come and go because
it's kind of bizarre. Like the attitude that people kind of start to take on, like this movie is going to come and save us all from the summer of boredom or I don't know. Like people really like to get excited and have that feeling. But I
post Avatar depression because they built their lives. It's like when you know you're in a cult and the spaceship doesn't come, it's like what are we gonna do now?
But I've been disappointed by Hollywood so many times.
Yeah.
I don't really believe, you know, it's like I believe it when I see it, when the word of mouth gets out, sure.
And if it's even a little bit bad or even a little bit disappointing, just the endless arguments, and there's gonna be stuff people just throw back and forth. It dominates movie discussion. Like no one will talk about anything but Batman for like a really long. It's like, oh God, I just want it to come and go.
I know that you. I mean, for the job you have to stay up on all this stuff. But I really have to, because the hype, I don't know when it set in, maybe 15 years ago, but when the hype actually became part of the product, I very quickly was turned off. So I don't, you know, any of the lead-in, any of the blogs, you know, I read io9 for a little while when it first started, and then even that was too much hype, and so now I just don't pay much attention.
Yeah, I pay too much attention, so that's my problem. All right, last question. Are limited run, expensive pricing models good for anime? Who's going to buy Fate Zero 20 years down the road if the only option is an out-of-print Aniplex release for hundreds of dollars?
I think it's actually a good model if you make your money back by selling really pricey copies, and like nobody wants to collect physical media anyway, and your choices are an expensive thing that you own because you're a collector and you like owning things, or the, you know, digital media for cheap or free. Like, the collectors are going to collect things, and the people who don't like owning physical things aren't. So actually, I kind of support the limited run model.
Yeah, the question is it better? Which is the better model? Better for whom?
Yeah.
I guess.
Well,
if it's good.
Yeah.
If the anime is good, I want as many people to see it as possibly can. So I want it to be as cheap as possible to get as many people to see it as possible.
Yeah.
But there are certainly things that have that niche audience that will really appreciate the $300 layout that's required. So, you know, whatever. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. It depends on the product, I guess.
That actually kind of irritates me when people do this, when they suggest that the way they frame their argument is, well, only one of these can work. It's like, well, no. You know, this show, what Aniplex is doing works for Aniplex. They make their money back. It's an extremely limited print run. They have this little thing, and it's working for them. They got a couple people employed in the U.S. They're putting this stuff out. They're selling through it. It's fine. It works for them. It's not the same as Funimation, and you can't expect that everyone's going to be doing things the Funimation way. That what Funimation is doing works for them, and what Aniplex is doing works for them, and these are two different business models, and then complaining that, well, no, everything should be a cheap $30 box set for 26 episodes. Well, it can't be that, and it's not going to be that. And just like every movie is not priced the same, and every studio doesn't do things the exact same way, nor does anime. So you have to be open-minded and be open to all this stuff, and look at the business model, and if it's making money for them and it's working for them, which it is for Aniplex, you have to just say, well, it's working for them. And you know, you may not like it.
Congratulations, they have a business model that works.
Yeah, you may not, you don't want to pay $300 for Madoka Magica. Okay, you don't have to. You know, they even put it streaming on Crunchyroll if you want to watch it. So, you know, I don't know. I'm never going to buy this if they don't change their business model to be like Funimation. Well, fine. You are not part of their consumer base.
Yeah.
Just remove yourself. Remove yourself from the discussion because you're irrelevant in this case. Well, who they're targeting are the people who do want to pay that much for it or will pay that much for it. And there are plenty of those people or enough of them to make it profitable. And so it's a big scope. You got to be open-minded and allow for all kinds of different.
Beauty of the market. You vote with your dollar. You know,
The only time I've ever said, like, boy, I wish that was more available was Garden of Sinners, which was extremely limited. You can't buy it. I mean, you can now for an exorbitant amount of money. You can rent it on PlayStation Network. But that's sort of, it's like, well, I wish more people who, like, maybe are a little tired of anime or wish anime would, you know, they'd have something new to see that would give them something truly new, like a new experience. I wish they would have like an easy, cheap, affordable, ubiquitous way to watch this. That's the only that's a little niggling point, though. It's like, yeah, I wish that was more available, but I'm not going to say, yeah, you're failures if you don't release this in a thing that wouldn't be profitable for you at all. So, yeah, I don't know. People get too wrapped up in the whole, there can only be one way. Everyone has to do things this one way. No, that's not the case. It's a
why can't it be the most convenient way for me?
Yeah,
well, that I prefer. Indeed, I suspect that whatever this $300 item is, they probably do want it. They probably want it very badly. They don't want to pay $300 for it. They want to pay $30 for it, and that's not how it works.
Yeah, I mean, that's like saying, why is, you know, this Jaguar? Why this should be the same price as this, you know, Ford Festa or whatever? It's like, well, it's the Jaguar though. You're paying for the Jaguar. It's a premium item. It's not your 1998 Chevy Malibu or whatever. All right, guys. Well, hey, that about wraps it up. That was a lot of Twitter, so thanks for doing that. I really appreciate it. It's been so much fun having you both back on. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Aaron and Noah for stopping by. Theme song's Bucharest by the band New Division. You can find them at thenewdivision.net. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, and while you're there, leave us a little rating or review. We'd appreciate it, and we will see you all next week.